protest conditions in school, to protest the sort of not enough Black and Latino history in school, to protest policing in school, to protest the lack of college classes in school. When you see that, right, many of these problems we face today, and you look at high school students, right, leading the way on that, right, and you see, and I think that gives us a much more fertile kind of starting point for where we go from here. But I think that's part of why, I mean, if we only see the leaders as adults, if we only see the leaders as having to be charismatic speakers, right, that doesn't leave a place at the table for most of us. And when you see that leaders came of all ages, right, tweens to 80s, right, when you see it's men and women, when you see it's welfare recipients, public housing residents, church ladies, right, the whole gamut, right, there's a lot, I think there's a lot more to give us in terms of sort of where we struggle today.
You talk about how Black Lives Matter activists are compared unfavorably to civil rights leaders, and you talk specifically also about John Lewis, who started as a young man in that march from Selma to Montgomery. The first march over the bridge, King was not there, and he had his head bashed in.
Right. And I mean, I think one of the things that you see when you look at the civil rights movement is sort of groups like SNCC, right, made up of young people.
Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Right. Some sort of adults in the community are welcoming this militancy. Ella Baker, Rosa Parks, right? But many adults are very scared, anxious, trepidatious about SNCC, about this young people organizing 50 and 60 years ago, right? So, I think we also see the echoes of the kinds of criticisms. And many SNCC, former SNCC members put out a statement making the continuities between SNCC and Black Lives Matter clear, precisely because sort of many of the criticisms of Black Lives Matter were criticisms that they had faced 50 years ago.
Your criticisms of the King Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
A couple of things. If you've seen the King Memorial, he towers over us, right? He's sort of unapproachable. There are quotes all around. Not a single quote mentions racism, race, segregation. If you were to, like, come in from Mars and land, you would think he was sort of all about peace and love, right? And the kind of fundamental questions of race and racism and racial inequality, right, that he spoke about over and over and over, right? And a kind of pride, a Black pride, and that he speaks about over and over and over are sort of erased in that memorial. So both that he is the singular figure, right? The original plans had included sort of honoring many people, right? That he towers above us, but also that the quotes sort of are deracinated and they're stripped of their context. So it wouldn't have been hard to put under each quote sort of the context, right? That these come in movements, that they come at moments, but they're sort of hodgepodge, you know, 1963, 1967, 1957.
Seconds.
So we miss the kind of the power, and so many people visit it, and I just wish that we had a memorial that honored King the way he was.
Well, we will leave it there. Jean Theo Harris, A More Beautiful and Terrible History, The Uses and Misuses of Civil Rights History. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Burr, and it's time for the Monday Morning Podcast. For Monday, February 5th, 2018, what's going on? How are ya? How you doing? I'm actually doing pretty good after a Super Bowl loss. Congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles winning their first Super Bowl championship of all time. The first one. First one's the best one. If my
team 13% of college students in America indicate that excessive computer use has had a negative impact on their academic performance. If your time on the computer is causing problems for you, then you need to make some changes. Computer addiction is a real problem. The Center for Prevention and Outreach can help. Call today to speak to a counselor at 631-632-6450. That's 631-632-6450. Don't let your computer take control of your life.
During this warm season, we'd like to remind all bicyclists to take safety along for the ride, too. Wear a helmet, approach intersections with caution, yield to pedestrians, and stay as far to the right as possible. Remember, motorists often don't expect bicyclists to be on the roadways. So enjoy the beautiful weather that's in our future and ride with caution. And take safety along for the ride, too.
All right. You are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. I don't think the beautiful weather's here right now, but that's just my opinion. It's time once again for another edition of Off the Wall.
Look at that! That CD just stopped. Stopped dead in its
tracks. All right, that's what is known as a hardware failure. look at that! That CD just stopped. Dead in its tracks.
Right where it was.
And, you know, we're trying, folks. We're doing everything right. It's you know, we pressed a button. Look at, okay, I didn't. I wasn't anywhere near when that just happened.
It's the good part.
Wow. Then it just stopped on its own again. That's something. We have these brand new buttons here on the console, and we press them, and they don't do anything. They light up, but they don't do anything. That's why you had all that awkwardness before.
We're sitting here trying to test the buttons out in queue while the opening's playing, but it doesn't seem to be hooked up.
I did test one button, and it worked. I tested the dump button, and that worked great. So I assume the other buttons work because they're the ones that light up, and they don't.
And then you tricked yourself. No, you thought you pressed a dump button,
really,
but it was
cool,
a CD
though.
Player.
It's really cool because we have this new old console.
What do you call that? It's an over thing? Console?
It's retro. We have old-style VU meters, and I prefer those to the digital kind. And
it's basically furniture, radio station furniture. But
our chief engineer, Frank, built this, and it's really awesome. I just wish the buttons worked. There was a note saying, don't press the buttons, they don't work. But also the CD player is temperamental. But you know what? So are we. So we can identify. We can work with these conditions.
So it is sort of the beginning of the bike season.
Yeah.
You'll see bicyclists out there.
Well, no, I just took exception with the beautiful weather or whatever he said, in our future.
No, you're right. You're right.
Sorry, pal, but winter is beautiful, too. We just came from Iceland, okay, and it was really, really scenic and nice. Maybe you ought to ride your bike over there.
And we tried to bring some of that back with us, and hopefully there will be a little more later in the week. Everybody's getting over the events of the weekend and
A little more what later in the week?
Weather. Snow. There's snow.
Oh, yeah. That would be nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
Iceland style. Yeah, yeah.
Although we didn't see that much snow. We saw snow. And there was that one time in the city whose name I can never remember, the first night when we were traveling the ring road.
Akureyri.
Okay, if you say so. And we woke up, and it was snowing really good, you know. And that was the night we got stuck going up the hill.
Yes.
In that little town, no one else had a problem because they all had studded tires, and we had snow tires. And then, you know, the next morning, it looked like it was snowing pretty steadily. So I was a little concerned we might not make it to the next town. And it was scary. It was really, really scary. I think we even have some audio of me driving, which is kind of priceless.
That's when we had blasts of cold air when we opened the windows.
Yes, yes. But that audio, that'll air at a future date, maybe. We'll see. Yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of fun. Oh, and the PSA before that about computer addiction, now you picked that one out. Was that directed?
I picked both of them.
Directed at me in particular?
I just noticed things, you know, behaviors. People in society might need to hear certain things about the way they use technology. And, you know, I think Facebook and Google and all these companies would back me up. You know, Apple, of course, they're, you know, models for not using technology.
I'm going on Facebook right now.
Wait, you
to
get back
to this.
Step away from that computer. We're doing radio here. This is not a time for computer.
Okay.
No.
Okay, but the computer is just as good as radio. You know that. It's better, in fact, because everybody can be everybody.
Did you hear about my new podcast?
No, I was too busy Twittering to pay attention to you.
Yes, well, I'm working currently on a deal with a new platform that heard about me for my new weekly podcast.
You don't say.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
It's called Off the Rocker.
Off the Rocker. Oh, okay, this is just wonderful. Wow. CD players can be better, though. Look at that. It's going through the whole thing, and it might make it to the end this time.
So that's good.
I'm happy about that. How are you doing, Kyle, post-memo? The days after the memo are very very different, very more jaded, I would say.
No, yeah, it's been really a difficult time for me. I really don't know where I stand anymore. This really changes all of my opinions. Mm-hmm. They're all inside out, just totally upended, and I can't possibly think of really how I'll go on.
Shocking for most of us because, you know, no one expected the Eagles to take a lead that early.
Sure.
And they just kind of dominated throughout the entire competition. And before you knew it, the memo was out.
That's right. Yeah.
I mixed up my notes. I'm
Wait
sorry.
A minute. No,
I'm confused.
Game.
Yeah, the whole pile of papers got mixed up.
Was this a weekend massacre? Did I miss it? Wait, so the memo was supposed to be the massacre, right?
A massacre? Really? Another one? It doesn't even make the news anymore.
It was like a memo massacre.
Wow.
But
you know, and the poor memos, they didn't do anything wrong. You can't blame memos.
Did you hear there's going to be like six more memos or like an avalanche of memos?
Well, that's what they do. You know, when you release one memo, they start replicating. Well, before you know it, there's memos everywhere.
The Democrat response that is still being approved and, you know, can't wait for that.
Democrats have to figure out how to respond.
Pages. No, you're right. They do. But I heard it's 10 pages.
It was 10 pages last week. By the time we see it, it's going to be 2 weeks old. No one wants to read a two-week-old memo. Can you imagine that in the office? You have to wait 2 weeks to read the memo telling you not to park in the president's space? How are you supposed to know anyway? There wasn't a sign there. It's not like, you know, you're ingrained with that knowledge from birth.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you're parking there for 2 weeks, and it's somehow your fault? Because you didn't see the memo.
You didn't see the memo. You didn't read it. You might have seen it, but you did not acknowledge it. You did not read in between the lines. Because that's the way. Oh, wait.
I've got the Republican memo right. I wish I had the Democratic memo. That would be good if I had that. Explain to me, why can't the Democrats just release the damn memo on their own? I mean, if they're refuting the first memo, I mean, this is like some kind of a sketch here. They're refuting the first memo. How could they be in violation of anything if all they're doing is saying, no, that's wrong? You know, they need to clear that first, and Republicans can prevent it. Although I understand they won't prevent it. They sent it to Trump to
He's laboring over whether to release the Democratic memo because they're going through the process, which has all of these checks and whatnot.
Yeah, but he just went off the rails again. He's saying now that let's shutdown begin. I would love a shutdown, and his right-hand man Kelly You see what he said this afternoon? He called immigrants lazy for not applying, the Dreamers, for not applying for the right paperwork to move forward. So many immigrants are lazy. I don't have the exact quote, but wow, this is the guy that, you know, everyone said was the adult in the room. And no, he's just another jerk, one with power. And there were so many of them. So don't make that mistake.
Yeah, he's got the itis. He's got the Trumpitis.
And bravo to the CD player for making it to the end of the track. Thank you.
Oh, come on. Give it one more.
No, thank you, CD1. You did a masterful job.
Can I hit the counter?
I'm going to turn you off.
Oh, there's 2 seconds.
No, I turned it off because maybe it needs a little rest.
It was 2 seconds.
Oh, it was still playing? But there was silence. Really?
It stopped with 2 seconds.
Well, that's a little bit of trivia. Then our theme continues after it ends. So it's actually still playing, and that's part of the theme. So when we play the whole theme, we really should be quiet for a couple of seconds. But we don't know how to do that. All right. I just realized my CD is still in there, and I turned it off. I might never get it back. Oh, well. So memos.
All memos aside.
I guess we have to cast them aside because... I don't know. Well, State of the Union. Last week, State of the Union, we were talking about it, and it happened right on schedule.
Hotly anticipated.
I am not pleased with the resistance to it. Let's put it that way. A few Democrats didn't show up. Big whoop, you know? The ones who did sat quietly, didn't applaud. They're getting raked over the coals for that. But, you know... It wasn't enough. I'm sorry. This was. I heard, you know, a report from somebody who was there and didn't like Trump, and her big defiant gesture was to make eye contact with somebody else who didn't like it and kind of raise their fist up in the air silently, and so no one else could see. Wow, you really showed us, you know. No, someone had to throw a damn pie. No one threw a pie, all right? I didn't expect someone to actually bring a pie in, but they could have thrown a shoe, could have shouted something. You know, they shouted during Obama's State of the Union. You know, a congressman shouted, "You lie," during his State of the Union when he wasn't even lying. Here you have this crazy guy, this fascist that, you know, is tearing the country apart, and nobody can utter a peep, you know? Just the best they can do is not applaud. We need better than that, folks. We need to do better than just not applaud. You know?
Yeah, it was a very grouchy thing. I think his remark was they looked of death.
Oh, I would hope they look of death to him. Really, they should look like Satan incarnate to him.
Deathly stares, yeah.
He should not be able to close his eyes at night thinking of the image of Chuck Schumer bearing down upon him. You know? Mm. And that's really not the best image. We could do so much better than that. Nothing, you know, against Chuck Schumer, but we need more powerful figures, you know? We need angrier people. Because, really, really, the state of the country is in jeopardy. I'm not just spouting that, you know, out of crazy conspiracy theories or anything like that. If you look at the things that have happened in the last year, everything turned on its head and not in a good way. You know, I'm no fan of the FBI, believe me. They've prosecuted me in the past. But when you have words spoken of their integrity and their professionalism that the president said last week, that is detrimental on so many levels, you know? And when you have no respect for the rule of law, which he is basically encouraging people to do when it doesn't jive with his worldview, that's when you have complete mayhem and chaos, and not the kind that results in anything good.
Yeah, like it sets a double standard, adds to his many double standards that have already been sort of created and nurtured throughout this time. And let's not forget the Supreme Court appointees, the things that are going on within organizations like the EPA and, you know, the cascading effects of his administration and lack thereof, again, because he has not really retained that much or even employed, you know, filled those crucial positions. And his prerogative has really been about beating back stuff while his sort of political creatures are let loose in the swamp, as it were, as it's so often referred to. We need more of our leadership, like from the Democratic side, I believe, opening doors for more people. There will be a lot of interesting things. I mean, people are very much looking forward to the elections in the fall, and that's getting a lot of support. But we need to not forget about what he's doing now.
Kyle, we need to open some doors. I agree. But we need to open those doors and usher some people out, because this cannot continue. Not unless we just don't want to get anything done. If we want everything to fall apart financially, image-wise. I mean, the rest of the world, you may not see it prevalent in the headlines, but we're the laughingstock. Really are the laughingstock. The United States cannot be taken seriously in any kind of leadership role. They've torpedoed any chance of peace in the Middle East with their immature decisions there. The same thing has happened. I mean, North Korea, you just look at that situation. What's happening this week? Olympics are coming up
Yes.
Be careful, folks, because it starts on Friday, but Friday in Korea is Thursday here, so you might miss it if you're not careful. I almost did that. Thursday night is the opening ceremonies, even though it's Friday morning there.
Yeah, we were really checking all of these things, and it's true.
And I am just sick of the sore sportsmanship that already I'm hearing from people upset that North Korea is actually going to be there. Maybe the South Korean ice hockey team will lose to Canada or something as a result. I'm not really surprised that is going to happen. But the gains of actually working with the North Koreans on something like this, that is better than any victory anywhere. And the potential, if you choose to recognize it, is so significant and so astronomical, should be embraced. And if it goes nowhere, it goes nowhere. But at least this is an opportunity that did not exist before. These things don't happen very often. So I'm really sick of the short-sightedness of people saying, yeah, well, they didn't do the right qualification. Yeah, okay, it's extraordinary times. A lot of people cheat. A lot of people wind up places they shouldn't be. You deal with it. We're certainly dealing with a lot over here. So this is something I want to keep an eye on, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it'll lead to something positive. The thing is, I was telling this to my dental hygienist earlier today, because I went to the dentist today and I always have these great conversations.
Oh, how was that?
It was good. I learned there was a prostitution bust in St. James.
I always knew.
I'm not going to name anybody, but there are these foot salons apparently that have shaded windows, and there's all kinds of hanky panky going on there. That's what I just heard. Yeah, I'm not one to spread gossip, but apparently if you go into one of those places, there's more than meets the eye.
When you could be implicated, good. Wow.
Straight from the dentist chair, I don't know any more than that.
They really dish at your dentist.
They do.
This is serious.
Well, yeah.
There's a lot of some gabbiness.
Uh-huh. I'm sure in the foot salon they're talking about the dentist. Uh-huh. I got busted that week.
Yeah.
Anyway, the thing is, I was talking to her about North Korea, because that's what you do. And what happened was I basically realized I know that Kim Jong-un is never going to attack the United States. He's not going to go and send a missile our way. It's not going to happen. He might be rather odd. He might be a little full of himself, cult of personality and all that. But he's not that much out of his mind. And if he was that much out of his mind, even over there, there are enough people that would prevent such mass suicide. Because everybody knows that would be mass suicide if they did that. And I really, really, really doubt he would ever do that. I can say that with certainty. Having been there has nothing to do with it, but just looking at the situation, I think anyone can reach that conclusion. Just looking at how they love to insult, how they will not accept insults without responding in kind or with greater force. That's not something that's unique to North Korea. That's a very Confucian way of living life, and you see the same thing in South Korea, except it's not so much on a personal level. It's more on sort of a corporate level. You will see similar things to the mass games at the Olympics in South Korea, except it'll be not for the great leader, but for, the great Samsung. What are they?
Pepsi.
Korean? Who's Korean? What's a Korean? Hyundai. I don't know Korean corporation.
Kyocera.
Yeah, whatever. So that, you'll see.
LG.
You'll see similarity. Yeah, LG. That's the one I was
trying to think of.
Samsung
is also Korean.
Okay. All right. So I did
you
get
covered
that.
Them all.
So I can't say the same thing about our country. I can't say that I know Trump is not going to attack North Korea. Think about that. I can say with certainty that North Korea will not attack the United States. I cannot say with certainty that our country will not attack them. You know, just because we don't like what they are saying or what they are doing or what technology they're developing. You know, you might say to yourself, well, they shouldn't have that. Yeah, but they do. They figured it out, you know, and we're not the cops of the world where we get to tell everybody what they can do, even though a lot of people seem to think we are. We can't continue doing that. It's not right. So, yeah, this is a place that we've come to that we were not at in the previous administration. And it's scary. It's scary because if you take that step, it's a very, very bad road to go down and one that you can almost certainly not come back from. So this is serious. This is real.
Yeah, and it's also a proxy for a lot of other strong nations that is all, again, us not acknowledging the problems or a lack of disarmament worldwide and, to a greater extent, nuclear waste and other issues around energy. But weapons, all right, if you just want to narrow it to that, you know, these countries that we calculate we need to head off in some regard or another, you know, because it's either politically convenient or it would be strategic for future powers, say like China or Russia and on. It becomes they would become a strongman or someone working on behalf of another nation, and we feel we have. We have to play it in those terms and not respect sort of sovereignty as we interact and make choices as a nation ourselves. You know, we're withdrawing in a lot of regards through this administration, but also our military buildup and projection of force around the world. It's changing, but it's not necessarily dissipating. In fact, we're hearing basically that that's where a lot of investment is going to go into military and like black budgets and all that kind of, you know, fun stuff, which is great technology for, you know, killing things and blowing stuff up. But, you know, we're still, again, not confronting what it then becomes used for and leveraged for, which is, you know, disarmament and, you know, sovereignty of nation states wherever they are. And, you know, whether that's a port or, you know, strategic alliance or, you know, a waterway in the Arctic or in the South China Sea. You know, all of those things are about sovereignty. And, you know, to say that you have to enforce certain things and then point to freedom of navigation and other things, you know, you're taking a much larger strategic perspective and projecting it onto what is ostensibly a nation and putting the full American military behind every single decision any country anywhere wants to make is really, really insane. It's like holding a gun to everybody's head all at once, or you know, whoever at one time on behalf of the world. And it just seems very wrong because it doesn't really speak for the world. And that's where undermining things like the UN and our leadership role in like non-governmental or peaceful organizations is really bad in times like this. So, yeah, hopefully people get excited about other ways to spend money.
Would be nice. Would be really nice. Now, I just saw this come across just now.
That's
this is one of the worst headlines I've ever seen. Amtrak train breaks apart at 125 miles per hour.
That's how fast?
My God, what is wrong, Amtrak?
Okay, they've had a horrible week.
They've had a horrible last couple of months.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll tell you what solves this and what brings us up to spec with the rest of the world, because we are so far behind, is funding. You know, Trump keeps talking about infrastructure, and all he cares about are pipelines. He doesn't care at all about the train system. And it's falling apart because it's not being funded properly. We should not have to deal with this. at all. People are dying as a result of this, and we are so far. I mean, we come from other countries. You know, we visit Germany, we visit England, and you know, any country in Europe is so far ahead of us, so much wealthier as far as infrastructure. We don't even know. We don't even know what we're missing unless we go over there and look at it ourselves. You will see trains going by at 150 miles an hour, like it's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, if we were in Germany right now, if somehow, you know, the Man in the High Castle was a reality and well, okay, without the Nazis and all that, we could go from Stony Brook to New York by train in like 20 minutes. That's maybe even less because they go so damn fast. You know, that's the world we would be living in. Okay, again, the Nazis are a bad thing. So, you know, if we had that world without that and just the trains, it would be. You know, I'm gonna think of another analogy. But the thing is, we have very slow and inept trains here.
Well, it's not just it's a whole process too, like procuring it and getting. Getting like things permitted or surveyed and having like, you know, environmental assessments and all that stuff. Like, again, it's just a talking point for this leadership. And there's really not as much action and coordination as there needs to be. And this industry, it's very much like it's too small. It's tiny. Like, we're not thinking mega scale. We're not thinking on the size that our country is, and whenever we do, it's discouraged to plan on those levels, or it's, you know, that's, you know, massively government subsidized, or you you know, only have one or two major corporations. We should be growing each of these sectors within transportation, or whether it's contracting and other stuff, to create a workflow or a life cycle for these projects, mm-hmm. that is like 10 or 100 times bigger than it is in our country. We're too regional. We're tinkering.
I don't think we're regional enough.
Yeah, we're tinkering around. We're not connecting things and really making things as big as they could be.
Well, I mean, I just think if we improve things on a regional level, it might improve overall. I mean, you know, states that aren't interested in keeping their roads and rails running, whatever, you don't have to play. But in New York, in New England, in Washington, various places, you know, of the country that care about this, if we just built that so that it was world class, you know, I think then that might encourage others to actually start getting involved as well. You might see more private enterprise get involved, which is okay.
Well,
as long as you build something that is, you know, worthy.
Yeah, yeah, you have to have a functional system just, you know, to function, to work every day. But it has to be all of that. I think, like, your local and regional projects need to be, yeah, like you say, state-of-the-art, top-notch stuff. We deserve that as a country. But we should have many other mechanisms for interoperating, for permitting, and allowing these projects to be actually looked into and designed, like, really with intent, not as, like, a afterthought by your second, third, fourth, fifth lowest bidder, and then, you know, thrown to an amalgamation of the cheapest contractors you can find. Like, that's great, like, for the market, I guess, but, mm-hmm. you know, this is stuff that has to last 50, 60, 100, 200 years, whatever. You know, you should look at it a little bit differently, so we can have, like, a real, really long conversation about all the different parts of it that would need attention. But just getting the train sets, like you said, I mean, that's supposed to happen, but you need to have the track. You have to have all this other infrastructure for these projects to support it.
So, okay, I'm just looking at the story. New York Post, really, Google? That's the best you can do is give me the New York Post article? All right, I got to read from the New York Post here. I'm not happy about this. High-speed Amtrak train bound for Penn Station broke apart as it was cruising through Maryland on Tuesday. The 2150 Acela was traveling from D.C. to New York when the incident happened about 6:30 in the morning. The train was traveling about 125 miles per hour, which, by the way, is not considered high speed in the rest of the world. I know it's very high speed for us here, but it's not considered high speed. It's called higher speed or, you know, something close to high speed, but not really. Just a point of information there. Someone could have been walking through the train when that happened and fell to their... Okay, this is really... This source doesn't know the language that well. Someone could have been walking through the train when that happened and fell to their death. No, that's not... That's such a clumsy sentence. I don't mean to stick on that, but it just bothers me. Amtrak officials confirmed the incident and said there were 52 passengers aboard. That's all? 52 passengers on the whole train? Okay. A photo shows the connector between the two coupled trains broken and separated. What I'm curious about is how did the train stop if it broke in half like that? You know, you had the locomotive in the front. What about the poor people in the back that had nothing?
Was it completely separated? Does it say at all? It sounds like maybe there were some kind of safety or other secondary thing that it was still partially
okay,
attached.
Okay, now it does say the air hoses remain connected between the two cars. So I guess it didn't actually, I mean, it broke apart to some degree, but the cars didn't completely separate. So the air hoses held them together. All right, well, it's good for the air hoses. At least they saved some lives there, maybe.
So I wonder if there was some kind of metallurgical failure with that clasp, like the metal itself broke or had some kind of defect over time.
It wasn't maintained. You know, they have to stretch everything on so little money.
True.
It's nuts. It really is.
Yeah.
Incident just happened after 2 days. 2 days after an Amtrak train driving through South Carolina slammed into the back of a freight train, killing two workers. Last week, an Amtrak train carrying several members of Congress slammed into a garbage truck in Virginia. There was a wreck last year that killed a bunch of people because the train was going too fast in Washington State. It's just, the list goes on and on.
On the inaugural trip for that quote, higher speed line.
All things that could have been prevented with training, with safety equipment, all sorts of things like that.
Technology.
Yeah.
Investment. Bigger markets. Yes. More design, more engineering, more of American ingenuity and grit. All of it. Mm-hmm. Let's see it. Let's stop talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that's happening. Earlier, let's see, there was a text message this morning from the National Weather Service, which was miscoded as a tsunami warning. That's according to a statement from AccuWeather, which had passed a warning along to the public. The company, quote, has sophisticated algorithm to scan the entire message, not just header words, as from the time of a warning to the actual event can be mere minutes. I'm not sure what they're trying to say there. But as soon as the error was discovered, AccuWeather sent messages via social channels that no tsunami warning is in effect for the east coast of the U.S. There was a tsunami warning for the east coast of the U.S., and I'm only finding out about it now. I mean, that tells you something, you know?
I had no idea. No one, no thing, no alert. I was not informed.
Wow. So National Weather Service said it was looking into how a routine test message issued at around 8:30 a.m. by the National Tsunami Warning Center came to be released as an official tsunami warning by at least one private sector company. And that led to reports of tsunami warnings being received by phones and other media. My phone didn't do anything. My phone, it's so useless. Phones, other media, those in the East Coast, the Gulf of Mexico, Caribbean. There is no tsunami threat, the Weather Service's statement said, and the test message was not disseminated to the public via any communication channels operated by the National Weather Service, of which the Tsunami Center is a part. So it wasn't a missile from North Korea, but it was a potential tsunami out of nowhere that we didn't get. So, okay, we can all calm down then if we are just finding out about that now.
Interesting how these alerts are being tested, fine-tuned, and people really are having trouble with that technology, the distribution of information, of course, social media is the backup. That's how we solve it. So,
mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I had no idea that was going on. I'd love to see more weather, though.
The tsunami weather, is that really, I guess it is.
If it's a big tsunami, it would definitely change the weather.
Hey, we got a letter from a listener. We do that occasionally. We get letters. Our email address is always open because we can't figure out how to turn it off.
OTW?
Yes, at 2600.com.
Com?
Yeah, once again, otw@2600.com is our email address. You can write to us. I know people don't write anymore. People don't pay attention to anything anymore. It's all insulated in our little bubbles, talking to the same three people. But
if you'd like to hear my response, you can listen to my podcast on Tuesday.
Nobody cares, Kyle. Nobody cares.
What? If you'd like to see my snide remark in response to that, you can look at my
It's already posted.
Feed.
Yeah.
Tumblr.
Tumblr, Twitter, Snapchat, YouTube.
Bemoan.
Yeah, and Hotmail. Okay, so this listener named Steven writes in. Steven has stepped outside of a bubble, so I'm happy to hear from listeners who have things to say, and whether they're things that are good or bad, by all means, express yourself. Maybe we'll take phone calls in a bit. People can express themselves that way.
Yay.
All right. In a few months, I will be traveling to Germany. Good for you, Stephen. I haven't been to Germany since 1994, so I'm assuming things have changed since I last visited. They have. They have changed, because in 1994, the country had only been unified for a very brief period, a couple of years, and the eastern part of the country was still kind of being brought up to speed with the rest of the country. There's still a bit of that. There's still, you know, you'll notice differences in the east and in the west. But for the most part, it's a pretty prosperous place. As we were mentioning, high-speed rail everywhere, infrastructure that is maintained, people that are taken care of. It's one thing we learned traveling recently is that you got to take care of your people. And in Germany, they know how to do that. They take care of their people. You know, if you get sick, you can be tended to by doctors without having to worry about losing your house. Do you hear the story about this guy who won the lottery in this country? He won like $25 million. And he said, at last, I can afford to see a doctor. And the poor guy went to see a doctor and found out he had a terminal illness and died a few weeks later. In this country, you literally have to win the lottery to be able to see a doctor. That is how so many people live. And in other civilized countries that, like I said, are much richer than us because they spend more money on the people rather than on the bombs, they take care of their citizens. They're healthier, they're happier, they're more prosperous. You might have a bigger refrigerator. You might have a bigger car. If that kind of thing really matters to you that much, more than your life, okay, then I guess you win. But for the rest of the world, they're doing pretty good over there. They really are. And
it's weird how growing up it was like considered, I think, not cool or not. You were like focused on the wrong things if you had health insurance or you were pursuing that outside of I just got a job with benefits. Mm-hmm. But I can't tell you how many people I've met who proudly say they don't have insurance or remark that of course they don't pay for that, you know, kind of just completely dismissing the entire functionality of it because they've given up or they've got some reason, opinion, rationale, whatever it is, but they won't even try it. I mean, this is like when you talk about jobs, you talk about people who stop looking. Mm-hmm. It's people that completely dismiss health, you know, healthcare. And this isn't even like the religious crowd or people who are don't believe in it or feel like it's some kind of encroachment on their beliefs, but it's it's just completely backwards for a first world or supposed first world country.
Well, okay, I'm sorry, Stephen. We've only read a couple sentences of your letter, a few questions. I thought you might have some answers or advice that you could recommend on these few questions that hopefully we will get to now. Train travel. One, would you recommend purchasing individual train tickets or using a German rail pass? Very good question. Very good question, Stephen. It depends. It depends on how much traveling you're going to be doing. If you go to a site called bahn.com, BAHN.com, right now, for instance, there's an offer there for 20% discount with the German rail pass. You can travel for two consecutive days or you can travel for two days within 1 month. You know, it's not a huge country, so that's a good amount of traveling. And you wind up saving 20% if you had bought actual train tickets. But if you go to actually, it might be the same site or it might be a different site, bahn.de. That's where you can look up every single train and get prices. And in Germany, you can look up the prices and actually buy the tickets online, and they just get sent to your phone, and you can use those. Now, be careful if you do it that way, because there are different levels of ticket prices. You'll see a very a cheap ticket, I think, on the left-hand side, and that's tied to a particular train. So if you you're buying a ticket for the 355 train from Berlin to Hamburg, you have to be on the 355 train. You can't be on the 455 train because you bought the cheap ticket. Now, if you buy the more expensive ticket, you can use it any time during the day. Some trains you need reservations to get a seat. Other trains you can just walk on any train. It's all explained. I think there's a website called seat61.com.
Yes.
Which does a really, really good job explaining all the train systems in Europe. Maybe in the world. I haven't really explored it beyond Europe, but it's really a good way to find out what is best for you. But again, to answer your question, it depends on how much traveling you're doing and where you're going from and to. We bought individual tickets each time. In Spain, it made sense to get the Spain pass because you could get something like four tickets, four different journeys for the price of one. So yeah. It made sense to do that.
Yeah, it's a good way to test it out before you buy one of these Euro passes is to try it for day passes. Try it for a city pass when you're in a specific area. Try it for maybe, some other deal that's maybe a couple countries or something smaller as a part of your bigger trip. That way you get the benefit of the experience. You understand maybe a deal in a smaller place. And then you can approach the Eurorail pass with the same spirit. But at that point, maybe plan your whole trip with just this pass in mind. But it is a commitment. I would definitely be make sure you get actually the use. You're not trying to force yourself to do things just to say that it was the right choice as far as financially speaking. So, but you can make it up as you go, and you have that flexibility if you buy them individually.
All right, question two. I'm planning on taking the ICE. From Berlin to Munich. ICE is the high-speed rail. It's not it's the nice use of the word, or the initials ICE, not Trump's Gestapo. ICE from Berlin to Munich, what storage is available for luggage? Under the seat, overhead rack, luggage storage area / closet? Stephen, they do have over the seat. You can put your bags up there. They also have something towards the door of the car where you can put bigger pieces of luggage. Depending on how many people use that, there might be space, there might not be.
You can't really fit stuff under the seat.
No, under the seat, you can't do that.
Except between seats that are occasionally facing back to back. Sometimes there's space enough to fit like a rolling suitcase. People often do that if the luggage racks at each end of the train are full. But one other thing is the overhead on the ICE trains is a little shallow compared to like overhead in an airplane. It's not as tall,
yes.
So you can't stuff something that big.
And it doesn't close.
Yeah, there's no doors or anything.
So if you're carrying an ice pick attached to luggage, try to be careful how you store it up there.
My God.
Kyle almost got decapitated by...
I almost got an ice axe in my face because a pack, like just as we sat down, a pack like fell off of a rack and landed on the seat next to me. I was sitting by the window. But if I was sitting in that seat, I would have been dodging an ice axe. It was pretty hairy.
Yeah. Where was that? What country was that?
That was on the way to Moldova.
Okay.
From Hungary.
That was an Eastern European train
going
experience.
Going up past the ski town.
Okay. Well, there you go. Now, here's another question. Again, Stephen, as far as luggage, I've never seen anybody not be able to bring their luggage on board, but... if you carry a huge amount, it's just going to be unpleasant, period, traveling around. So, carry whatever you're comfortable carrying, and there's plenty of space for it on trains. I've never seen an issue. Car rental. Even though I've had plenty of driving experience in the U.S. and Canada, I've never driven in Europe / Germany. What are some of the major differences between driving in the U.S. versus Germany? Well, I wouldn't say there's that many differences. The roads might be a little bit narrower, more traffic circles probably. But, you know, you drive on the right-hand side of the road like you do here. Signs, traffic signs are more of the international bent. You know, we were just doing this actually in Iceland. I was trying to figure out what the yellow diamond means. You see a yellow diamond underneath a road sign. So, for instance, you say you're driving on 25A here. Underneath it, you'd see a yellow diamond.
With a white border.
With a white border. And I was wondering, what does this mean? You know, I know what most of the signs mean. I know the single slash, red on blue, I believe, means no parking.
Yeah.
We don't know this in the States. The rest of the world, everybody knows this, but we don't know this. So a single slash means no parking. A double slash, like an X, means no standing, stopping, or parking. And, of course, there are things like yield signs that don't say yield, but you know what the yield symbol is. That's international. That's international speak. So you'll see signs like that, and it's mostly common sense. Other than that, I think, you know, obviously speed limits are going to be in kilometers, not miles per hour. And, yeah, there's the Autobahn, which, you know, people like to drive fast on, but it's not really, you know, as super as people make it out to be.
Yeah. Driving styles, trucks and other kinds of drivers obviously are going to be much more familiar, and you'll have to stay out of the way in a lot of scenarios. But other than that, yeah, different types of stoplights and speed cameras. Sometimes the stoplights start in reverse, so they go red, orange, green.
Yeah, I don't know if it works that way in Germany, but it does. Sometimes you get an extra little bit. Like in Iceland, it was like that.
Yeah.
Lights red, and then it turns orange and red. And everybody can go when it turns orange and red, which is a second before it turns green.
And obviously, kilometers.
But you're not supposed to go if somebody's still in the intersection. Actually, you shouldn't do that if it's green and someone's still in the intersection, but it's like I said, it's mostly common sense. Okay, another question. If I rent a car in Germany and I plan on driving to Austria, Poland, Liechtenstein, or Switzerland, what do I need to prepare for, like border crossings, tolls? Well, I don't know about tolls. You know, that's different in every country. And you know, your car rental agency might have some kind of device that allows you to pay, or you might just have to look that up. As far as crossing into other countries, none of the countries, except for maybe Switzerland, you'll have to worry about borders because they're all in the EU. Switzerland is not. But any border patrol there is going to be fairly inconsequential. You just have to have your passport, which you should always have anyway. One cool thing about renting a car in Germany, which is not the case here in the States, you can drop off your car in a different city and not pay extra. So you can drive all the way across Germany, drop your car off in a different city, and it's a lot cheaper than a train. You know, it's if you want to drive, you don't have to return it to the same place. So that's kind of cool. And I don't know if that works in other countries. You can't drop it off in Austria, but you can drop it off in you can, but it would cost you a fortune. But you can pretty much drop it off anywhere in Germany.
Yeah, and it's especially useful if you have a lot more luggage and you want less compared to like the picking up and putting down of being on a train. So if you have a lot more stuff, a car is a great way to go.
Yes, yes. So we've had a lot of fun in cars in Germany. And finally, and I'm really glad people are asking questions like this because, you know, it makes us think about how we travel and ways that we can share what we've learned with other people. I have a Google Nexus 6P phone on Verizon Wireless. The phone can be used in Europe. I can use my wireless provider, or I can swap a SIM card to use a provider in Germany. Is it cheaper to swap carriers in Germany? You know, again, this is something I would say really depends on your plan, depends on your company. I used T-Mobile overseas, and I had a lot to complain about, but I also was reachable for the most part, except when their roaming went down, using the same American phone number at a set rate, which isn't as bad as it used to be. So I know I'm not going to have a $1,000 phone bill waiting for me when I get back, and I'll be able to have the same phone number the whole time. Other people might like to swap out their SIM and get a German number while they're traveling and, you know, just pay for that and not have to worry about data charges or roaming charges of any sort. It really depends on your preferences and on the plan you have with your company in the States.
Yeah, I would echo that and just add that it really is up to you. You can try these other things, maybe bring even a spare handset to play around with Sims from wherever you're going. But the best I think is setting it up with your carrier, depending on the relationship with your carrier. Well, it, assuming it's as adversarial as it is in most everyone's case, try to find a package that sort of suits you. If you are traveling, don't do a lot of things like watching videos over that connection, because that'll definitely burn through whatever data allowance that you're paying for. And that can be really difficult if it becomes an overage, because you get maybe a huge charge and all this data that you don't use, because as soon as you go over, you fly back and it doesn't matter. Yeah, those kinds of things.
All you have to do is use Wi-Fi. You know, use a Wi-Fi connection in a hotel or a coffee shop, and you know, you can do the high bandwidth things that way.
And have it pay, have it tell you, like send an alert, those kinds of things, so you can check your usage and all of that. Those are great ways to help offset it. And yeah, use hotspots, or bring also maybe a travel router. That's something we've played around with too. There's all kinds of little gizmos you can add to the mix to maybe share whatever connectivity you have, or to do some sort of wireless tethering or other kind of hotspot stuff. But there's lots of options, and definitely a lot of places you can go to get connectivity with, in a pinch.
Okay. Thank you, Stephen, for that great letter, and I hope we were able to help. And other listeners, please write to us, because we love answering questions and reading your opinions. OTW@2600.com is our email address. Super Bowl in 1 minute or less. What do you think?
What did I think? It went very, very quickly. And,
you know, yeah. The game doesn't matter. Who cares about the game? But, you know, the aftermath, riding in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, and the cops are helpless to do anything about it.
That one picture of the...
Wow.
Yeah, the double standard there. Yeah, all the white people they couldn't control.
Uh-huh.
I echo that sentiment. That picture of a kid pushing a car over, I just kept thinking that car easily could have fallen back over on him.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many dangerous things.
But, you know, that's not even the point. The point
is, if
people had done something, if people had turned a bicycle over in Ferguson or in Baltimore, the cops would be all over them. And in this particular case, they did nothing. They just held back and said, oh, let them be themselves. And, you know, it's, which is it? Do we want them to not react the way they react in Ferguson and in Baltimore? Or do we want them to react more in Philadelphia? I know what I want. I want them to not let people express themselves. But, you know, if all it takes is one person saying Black Lives Matter, and all of a sudden the cops are in military mode. Here's the Eagles win, and we're going to torch the city. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know what? It just happens.
Well, we know what it is. We know what it is. Mm-hmm. We will control the crowds how we wish, whenever we feel is necessary, and to whatever degree, however perverse that rationale is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's social engineering. It's controlling the populace. And, you know, this is something we want to see. We want to support this message of jubilation and all of that, whether it's the Cubs or the Eagles. Just fill in your Americana. But as long as it is for the flag and freedom and patriotism, you know, then it's something we can let go. We'll let it slide. But any kind of resistance to that, that's counter to that narrative and that nationalism, well, that's something we need to question, even when the leadership itself is under examination.
Okay, about the 10 seconds we have left, we really achieved something momentous today, the human race. You want to explain it very quickly, Kyle? What happened today?
Oh, I tried. It was the launch of a very, very, very big rocket.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's launched a big rocket and the return to Earth of three of them, right?
Yeah. We know two. I tried to check the core stage of the SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket. I don't know if that actually landed, and I tried, but we couldn't find info.
It's incredible. I don't know what it is about space rocket scientists, but they can't run a TV station. NASA TV, the SpaceX people, it's like watching high school AV clubs. You know, that show us the right graphic and explain what's going on, and we don't know yet if everything returned to Earth, but we do know that this rocket was launched, it's on its way to Mars, and there's a Tesla car. It actually is a Tesla car with a mannequin inside on its way to orbiting Mars or orbiting the sun. I'm not exactly sure what it is it's going to be doing, but it's really, really cool. It's an amazing achievement, and it's not being covered nearly enough by the media, which unfortunately we can say the same thing because we saved it to the last minute. But this is the kind of thing that should be inspiring us rather than everything else that we have been talking about.
Yeah, the car is being used as a weight for this test flight. And mm-hmm. so it's goofy and fun and also really huge and amazing. And this is what we've been doing for the last 60 years. So go aerospace and let's do something other than kill each other.
That would be really nice. Really nice. And also, I should point out that the song we're about to go out with by David Bowie is the song that is playing somehow in that Tesla as it heads to Mars. And that with that, we're going to sign off for tonight. Emmanuel.
And Kyle.
Good night.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mummy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a saddening bore, for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Take a look at the law, ma'am, beating up the wrong guy. Oh, ma'am, wonder if you'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on Mars? On America's tortured brow, that Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog, and clowns. But the film is a sad thing more, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, as I ask you to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's a take a look at the lawman beating up the wrong guy. Oh man, wonder if he'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on Mars?
Hey, kids, it's WUSB Stony Brook Finn's Revolution right here on Tuesday night. It is 7:04 in the p.m. The prisoner is usually kicking us off. We have Joy on Fire in the studio with us right now, so stay tuned. We're going to hear a little bit. Let's rock it. Yeah, so this cut is brand new from Joy on Fire's new album, Fire on Fire. Stay tuned to talk to the boys. Okay, a couple of tunes from the new Joy on Fire album, Fire on Fire, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. When this first came out, we played quite a bit of it. We continue to play quite a bit of it. And right now, we're extremely lucky to have both John and Chris in the studio from Joy on Fire. Gentlemen, how are you?
How's it going?
Good. Finn. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you guys here live in the studio. Wish Anna was here. Maybe we could have played a little bit. You know, you never know. We'll do that next time.
Yes, please.
So I know we have discussed before, but let's talk a little about the history of Joy on Fire, the early history, John, if you want to take us through a bit.
Yeah, started in Baltimore 9 years ago. Anna was in Baltimore studying saxophone at Peabody. I was in Baltimore at the writing seminars trying to write a novel.
Okay. How'd that go?
I finished a different novel. Not the one I went down there for. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the one that I write when I'm 60 or 70. Yeah.
Okay.
But I also went down to Baltimore because the instrumental music scene down there was and still is wonderful.